Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung. From strategy to couture architecture, let's start with three word pairs: book publication or Instagram.
I think Instagram comes first, and it's like more important for us now and on a daily basis. But we do dream of our own kind of coffee table book, let's say, and it's something in the pipeline, but it didn't happen yet.
Star architect or down to earth?
Down to earth.
Typically Belgian, fries or chocolate?
Fries. Yeah, I don't eat chocolate.
But you have such a good one,
I know,
in Belgium.
I know. A lot of people enjoy it.
Dieter van der Welpen is a phenomenon. His architectural practice has only been in existence for 9 years, and yet he has already realized some outstanding projects, not to mention his more than 116,000 followers on Instagram. What sets him and his office apart? The answer? So-called couture architecture, a thoughtful and detailed design based on the client's need and personality. With the help of quality materials and exceptional craftsmen and an eye for the finest details. But it's about much more than design. In today's podcast episode, we take a look behind the scenes and talk about strategy and couture architecture with our guest Dieter van der Welpen. We are Diane and Nicole from Jung.
Dieter van der Welpen Architects is an Antwerp-based architecture and interior design firm specialized in high-end residential and hospitality projects. The aim is for a perfect symbiosis between the client, the property, and the design. Dieter, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you.
So let's start. Take us into your office for one moment. I have three questions. Which project was the most important milestone for your office? The second one is, what new projects are you working on right now? And the third one is, which cities or countries are you currently working in? So let's start with the first one. Which project was the most important one?
There's different projects which were really crucial, but I think some of the initial projects were probably most important. I think one project which was really crucial, especially for our international growth, was the first project we did in New York, because I was actually started around the same time that I was starting on my own after having worked in different offices in London and Antwerp. It was in a very early moment, actually, because usually you build your practice and after a while you get an international commission. But around the same time I was starting, I had already done a few smaller projects in Antwerp. And I got a message from someone in New York, Thomas. He followed me already on Pinterest for a few years. And he was looking for an architect in New York to remodel his loft in Tribeca. And he liked my aesthetic on Pinterest. So he reached out and he was like, I see you're an architect in Belgium and I really like that aesthetic. Do you know someone like you in New York to do my house? And I was actually planning a city trip already to go to New York. So I said, no, I don't know anyone in New York, but I want to do it myself if you like. So if you want, I come over and you have a look. And we did and we hit it off. And then, you know, we started sketching and we built it together. To do that so early was really important, I think, and critical maybe, or like a trigger to do other projects abroad. And even while we were already like doing projects here in Antwerp and in Belgium, I noticed that having some projects going on internationally helped us to get better commissions in Belgium, because, you know, it led to publications here in Belgium because we were a Belgian firm doing work in New York. Yeah, I think this was definitely an important project and a really nice one as well. Like, and I'm still very happy with that project, and it led us to do like a holiday home for the same client and an office for the same client in New York. I think that was definitely a trigger or like a key project in the beginning.
Which is also a very good sign. I mean, if they continue working with you, obviously it was a good idea to go there.
Yeah, we're lucky to have quite a few clients actually that we do multiple projects with, and it becomes like a relationship. And when you do a house, it's a very personal thing. You work for like 2, 3, maybe 4 years together. You see each other on a weekly or monthly basis and you have very like in-depth talks. So then they want to do another project. It comes sometimes naturally to work with the same team, with the same contractors, even the same partners. Then it makes the second and the third project much easier and smoother.
And what new projects are you working on right now?
We're always working on multiple projects at the same time. I'm focusing on two which were really like on the drawing board. the client didn't see anything yet, and it's two projects. So it's one in Belgium and one abroad. The project in Belgium is actually a remodeling of a very grand townhouse. I think it's from around the end of the 19th century. And it's really like this, you know, Beaux-Arts style building close in the center of Antwerp with a grand staircase. It hasn't been really remodeled nicely in the past 100 years, let's say. So there's a lot of work to transform this into a contemporary house because it's a very young family, the client. But they want to like keep, of course, all the beautiful historical details, but then update it to the contemporary standards and make it really cozy because it's a very large home. That's kind of a challenge as well, and introduce new elements which merge with the original language of the house. That's something that I really enjoy doing, actually. That's one project here in Antwerp. And the other project we're working on is also an interior remodeling. Well, it's on the edge of interior and architecture, actually, as a lot of our projects are. So it starts with interior, but then in the end, you're also taking on the facade or adding small extension or more aggressively remodeling some parts of the house. A lot of projects is in Marbella in Spain, and it's also kind of large country home, which we're also updating to new standards and introducing more personal interior for the client and adding a lot of detail, which is something completely else because there the lifestyle is different and it's more about living indoor and outdoor at the same time, merging the indoors and the outdoors, connecting swimming pools, connecting the views, bringing new views into the home, which are currently maybe blocked by certain walls or different rooms, and two different things and different locations, which we enjoy actually, because it gives inspiration just already by diving into this typology and this location, which we haven't worked on before, for example, doing some research into that and seeing how we can reinterpret what's already there, build on that and add new layers, and try to make it personal for the client, but also make it in a way that it can stay there for the next decades, hopefully, or even longer. Always trying to be contemporary, but timeless at the same time.
As we already mentioned in our introduction, you call your style couture architecture, or is it more of an attitude? What do you mean by couture architecture exactly?
We use the word couture architecture because I think it's the way we approach a project and the relationship with the client. And we make the analogy because when you see like these classic fashion houses in the past, like Christian Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, people went there to get some couture dress, for example. So somebody would go there and there was a certain occasion and say, okay, I like your signature, but I want like a green dress for this occasion. And then they would measure the person and make something special, something unique exactly for this person, like really tailored within the briefing. Let's say the briefing is, okay, you can do whatever you want, but it needs to be green. But in the signature style of the fashion house, because that's why they went to Dior, to Saint Laurent, in a way, that's how we like to work as well, because people come to us because they see other projects we did and they're like, we like your style, but still they want something unique. And also we want to create a new project, a new design, something custom. So I think in a way that's very similar. And then they come to us and instead of measuring the person, we do a very in-depth interview, you know, like a very long talk where we really try to get inside of the head or the mind of those clients or the person or the couple or the family and try to understand how they live, what's important. You know, it's two people and they have sometimes different requirements, different needs or different accents. This is kind of psychology a little bit and try to understand what's really important. And then after that, we start sketching and designing and taking a long time to digest all this information we have and combine that with the location, with the plot or the existing house. And then we start designing and adding our own touch, of course, but keeping in mind all these requirements and these wishes and try to blend this all together in a design concept. And hopefully then we can convince them that this is really what they need and what they're going to enjoy. And then if you are able to build it, to really realize it, and you see that it really fits like a glove or fits like a dress, and it's an amazing feeling and it's very rewarding both for us and for the client as well, I think. And that's what drives us, I think. And what I love at doing private houses, there's many other niches or topics in architecture, of course, that we really focused on this from very early on.
You founded your office in 2013. Others open an office and initially work on small jobs, renovations, etc., until they get a larger project. But you, we just talked about it at the very beginning, you choose a completely different path, like specializing on this residential luxury architecture from the very beginning. What was your initial idea on it? Why this path?
I knew I wanted to do private houses, and I knew I wanted to do beautiful houses and really focus on the aesthetical part of it. And I knew I wanted to work with beautiful materials, with really craftsmanship. And I always, from a young age, had a passion, not just for architecture, but also for interior design, like on an equal basis. Initially, of course, I started also doing my training in offices that were also active in this field, both in London at David Edge and in Belgium at Vincent van der Zandt, to really learn more about this and using those materials and those details. So then from the moment I started my own office, I knew I really wanted to focus on this. And I think this very extreme focus helped to get where we are now, because initially you're trying to find commissions or you get requests for projects, and sometimes you get requests which are actually outside of this niche that you really want to focus on, but you take it on anyway, or you need to take it on because it's, of course, also like an economical situation. The thing which allowed me to focus on those really nice private commissions was also because before that, maybe some backstory, but actually as a student, I started a 3D visualization company. And when I was doing my own office, actually in the beginning, we still continued this 3D business just to get in some money, basically, which also allowed us to be even more selective of taking on the architecture projects that were good for the office and that would lead to better office, better projects in the future. And then I kind of faded out the 3D and, you know, only did architecture from after that. And even some of the people that were working for me for the 3D company then moved over to the architecture side and are now still working in our architecture team. So I think that was something quite important because, as I said, it's like an economical reality. You need the money. So that's, I think, which sometimes leads to taking on projects which maybe are not ideal. And it allows us to be very picky and also to spend a lot of time on those because some of those initial projects were totally not profitable, actually, because we spent so much hours on it. And, you know, we were doing kind of pitches in the beginning as well, not really like competitions, but more like we design a project. And if you don't like it, it stops there. And if you like it, we build it. And luckily, we built most of those, but we spent hundreds of hours on a concept design as a kind of competition against ourselves, more or less, not against other people, but more like if they like it, we build it. Otherwise, we lost time. So we spent a lot of time with that. So I think that's one thing. And then the other element was the idea to prefer to take on a very small project, which is very high end, instead of a larger project, which was less high end. One of our first projects was just a bathroom. But a bathroom in a beautiful loft in a historical building with a good budget and with a client who really was passionate about design, wanted to do something special and something extraordinary. It was a very small bathroom and there were no windows at all. But client, she wanted to do something like hotel style, but very dark, bold design. And we did a bathroom with black Nero Martina marble, like huge slabs of marble from the floor to ceiling. But we combined it with rough concrete on the floors, concrete on the ceiling, and then some very delicate bronze metal details in the floor and in the mirror. So it was kind of like a jewel piece. It was so small and really hard to realize. I think it was 3 meters by 2. So just for the contractor to get everything there. And I spent a lot of time with the contractor, just myself, like drawing on the floor, like those lines where the bronze details needed to perfectly align because there was no margin for even 2 millimeters error. And then the marble slabs was on the fourth floor. So I had to, you know, like crane them in. And then with 7 people, you know, like hand over the marble slabs through the apartment to the bathroom and install it there. But when it was done, it was a beautiful project. My strategy was like, okay, we're going to do a small project, which is beautiful. We're going to share those images and attract people who like this bathroom, but who want to do their whole house in this kind of detail level of craftsmanship. And I think that worked. We got those clients who said, okay, this is nice. And then there were people who say, okay, you want to do a whole private residence from scratch, new build with the architecture interior design as well. And some of those craftsmen, because that was a project around 2013, 2014. So some of those contractors, we still work together with. And the marble guy, Angelo from Il Guinto, that was one of our first projects together. And we still collaborate a lot. And we enjoyed this working relationship and experimenting with materials and pushing classic materials to the limits and bringing them in a contemporary way, which is something throughout our trajectory has been an interesting aspect and something with a research component that we really enjoy, all of us, not just me, but everyone in the team, actually.
Yeah, and you need people like this to realize such projects. I think it's not that easy nowadays to find people who are that passionate about their work.
It's crucial, and I think we are lucky in Belgium to really have this kind of tradition, because they always say like every Belgian is born with a brick in the stomach. You know, they built a lot of houses and everybody is doing custom houses in all scales of the budget, actually. So there's a lot of these smaller family-run companies of craftsmen really specialized in just one trade. So it's a company maybe doing only hardwood floors, or they only do metal work, or only do bronze or brass work, and with a stone as well. And we found some of those companies, and you know, we worked with many, and some are like, this is too difficult for us, let us just do a lot of projects but in a more straightforward way, and thought we were crazy, you know. And others like this challenge, like Angelo from Milgarnitui, he's on the same page and building his business around a similar time. And we're always joking like, yeah, when Dieter's going to come on site and you build a marble sink, it's not just about looking nice on the top. He's going to go on the floor and see the underside of the sink. And it also needs to be perfect. And the veins need to continue. And it's this pursuit of perfection, I guess. You know, you can never reach 100% perfection, but you want to at least aim for this perfection. And you need people who also have this eye, and craftsmen who enjoy this level of detail of the perfect alignment, and who get really happy from this if it works, even though the way towards this result is tough and it takes so much more time and so much more effort from all people. And it's not easy. You know, like, it's not just me, it's our whole team, but it's also like the craftsmen. And when we do a house or remodeling, there's maybe 50, 60 or 70 people involved just doing one house, and everybody brings his own skills and his own techniques together. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And it's this level of craftsmanship, which has been in building houses for hundreds or thousands of years even, and applying these to contemporary design and to really push that forward, and using technology, using computers, using CAD design to create beautiful homes.
And it's a perfect way to learn from each other.
Yeah, 100%. You always need to allow like some level of adaptation during the design process based on input from the craftsmen, from the builders. Because if you would be just saying like, this is exactly the design and it's to be built like this, even like the behind the scenes part, yeah, then maybe that's not the perfect way to build it. And sometimes they come up with ideas, and then, you know, we have this discussion on site. Maybe we can realize it's like this and it's even better, or we can do it without having the screws visible, and you create a different way.
Invisible screws, very important point.
Yeah. We have always these discussions, and you know, it always starts with, oh, that's impossible. And then in the end, it happens anyways. We did one house years ago, like one our first new built house, and we had like a very special staircase, very minimal. And then we wanted to do a skylight above without seeing like the window frames. And initially, the vendor, like from the window manufacturer, they came up with a huge piece of glass. It was like more than 3 meters by 3, and they had two lines in crossing in the window, you know, so it was like 3 pieces of glass. Actually, we really wanted without those pieces, and we want to see just like the blue sky above the staircase, like a James Turrell installation even. And just that took like months of working together with them, like bringing on engineers to really make this happen. And the first meetings were like, it's impossible. We can try to make the lines thinner, but there will be the lines. You know, the house took 4 years to build, but in the end, there's a skylight without anything visible. No window frame, no edges. It's just a set staircase. You look up and you see the blue sky, or the gray sky, or the thunder. To get everyone like on the same page and really, you know, work together in a collaborative and enjoyable way, also for them to really get them excited to be like, if we can make this happen, it's going to be so nice to see this out. And it's going to be something we can all be proud of. And it's going to lead to new projects, not just for us, but also for them. And that's a great collaboration if it happens like that, and very rewarding journey.
Let's turn to the strategy point. It's quite unusual for architects to talk about their strategy, since the projects and images are meant to tell their own story. But you've already provided a nice teaser in our preliminary conversation. You said it's not just about design. How do you find your clients? You told it already at the very beginning. Pinterest was one point. I think social media seems to be an important communication platform for you, no?
Absolutely, yeah. Social media has been crucial for getting our work out there and reaching new clients. And also now it's probably one of the ways that most of our clients find us, and definitely our international clients. And that has been from the beginning part of the strategy, and always believe that you can do good work, but you need to get it out there. In architecture, marketing was always a very dirty word. And there's a lot of people who believe more in just doing good work and then it will lead to a new work, but maybe in a slower pace or maybe in a smaller geographical area, because then it's word of mouth to new clients in the same city or in the same country. But we believe that we would be missing out on projects if you would go this route. And I believe that we're going to focus on doing good design. That's essential, and trying to do the best project, but then making sure that everybody sees it. And I think that's just a good thing and not a bad thing to get the word out there and to really push those images, but not in a commercial way or not in like a sales way. It's just like making sure we get like good photography for all the projects, like from day one, from the first project we did. Like the first project was a fashion boutique in Antwerp. The second was a small bathroom. We hired top photographers to really make good shots that we could send out to magazines so that we could put on our website or on our social media. And it's something that we continually invested really in, not just the money, but also the time and really the focus on this. And now my wife, Patricia, who is also working full time in our office, and she's an interior photographer and also responsible for that visual output and making the perfect shots, making photos which really show the project in a good way that we can then share. And especially on social media, sharing those images, people like to see it. It's not advertisement. It's just like sharing with the world what we do. And as architecture students, there's people who just like beautiful homes, and as potential clients following us, all those people. And that's really nice to see that you kind of start building a community and those images get shared and it starts leading its own life. I think using that to create better design, that's just wonderful. I think keeping that in mind, of course, also from the beginning, has been a very important element in getting the work out there. You need to find those clients. Some art forms, you can make the work without a client. You can make it and share it. Maybe, you know, you make a painting and then you'll see later on if there's a client or not, but you can already make the painting. But for us as architects, we can't make the building without a client. We need the client in the beginning, and you need good clients. You need clients who are also passionate about design and want to create something special, something ambitious. And especially in our niche, yeah, you need to look wider because there's not so many people who have the same vision like our aesthetic, because, you know, there's so many different ways of building a house. So you need a very specific client. So you need to look wider. And for us, it meant also going international, because there's some offices who take on, you know, a lot of typologies, but they only work in one geographical region, for example. And we could have went that route as well, but we said, okay, no, we're going to do those high-end residential projects, but worldwide, not just because then there's more potential clients, but also because then you have different inspirations in different countries. But that also meant that we needed to get the word out internationally and reach out to those locations and just share the images. And gradually then you reach people in New York, you reach people in LA. And then, you know, the word of mouth thing is still existing, of course. But instead of having that just in Antwerp or in Belgium, you have like a same kind of word of mouth going on happening in New York or in Los Angeles. And then we get another person reaching out to us and they say like, oh, we heard from a local realtor or developer that you're doing a house in Bel Air. We have another project in Hollywood. In this way, you meet new people, you know, like the kind of snowball effect happens, but just on a faster pace and in a larger scale geographically. I think that's amazing and wouldn't be possible probably without social media, and wouldn't be possible 10 years ago or 20 years ago. You could only hope to be then in a magazine, and then after years, you would be in an English magazine, and then, you know, maybe in an American magazine, and build up like that. And now, in a few years, you can reach different countries, really build a project there, and it became much easier to collaborate virtually or collaborate online, and you can really build those projects. You know, during the COVID period, we started on projects that got into construction without us being even on site.
Let's talk about your Instagram account. You really have a large community. It's about 116,000 followers. So is there anything you do to expand your reach?
On Instagram, it just takes a lot of time and energy, I think. I always get this question, like, when do you have time to post all those things or to share those stories on site? And the reality is, when we go to a construction site, I always let one of my colleagues drive. On the job site, I'm filming some things or taking some photos. And when we come back, then I'm sharing those shots and those kind of walkthroughs on site. And people really enjoy this kind of content when they are taken along on a construction site visit, and they see like the project grow through the years. And there's people who really like following one specific project and they're like interacting. And it's not just one-sided communication, you know, it's also like reacting to those people. There's a lot of private messages coming in and you're talking, or there's people asking questions. By investing time in this, you meet new people, and maybe then that turns out to be a future client or like somebody who then wants to work in our office because they see this work. That's something you need to believe, that this is useful, and there's other people or architects who don't see the value maybe, or don't see how they would get started with this, or think they don't have the time. It's not always spending hours on this. It's more like keeping this always in mind and then spending like 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, checking some reactions and getting on this. And that's how it can work. And now there's also something that Patricia is working on in our office. It's a team effort and something to really keep in mind, but it's still me like reacting to those private messages and starting those conversations. And I think that's also something people like, to having this kind of access and to having this direct form of conversation. And
it seems to be the easier access to the people.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just from people to reach us, but also from me. Like when I'm in a different town and there's architects that I admire, I can reach out to them on Instagram, and it works in a very organic or very spontaneous way. And you kind of build this network worldwide of like-minded people. And there's like a guy that I see that does really great metal work. And then I just send him a message on Instagram saying like, can you meet up? Can you have a look at this house? And then we start maybe working together. And that's what I really like about Instagram. It takes just a kind of mindset to think about it, to be working on this on a kind of daily basis, and also to create the content. Because in an earlier time, when your project was finished and you did a photo shoot, maybe you got 10 good photos. But now people want to see more details. And that's the good thing of having our in-house photographer, we can create much more shots, much more details, because in a magazine, maybe you have like a few wide spreads of showing a whole living room. But on Instagram, it's also about the details. And especially in our project, it's really about these connections where metal meets marble meets wood, and showing that these very refined projects look good, or that we can really make it happen, because you can make beautiful 3D images, but to then make it in reality, it's another challenge. And that's also, I think, why now, for example, we're also spending a lot of time doing video, because that's another like move which has been, you know, in the making for the past years already. But it's something which allows us to create this immersive content, even an immersive way of showing our project and bringing people along on a trip or inside a house. You know, with a photo, you could Photoshop a lot of details which maybe were not good, like those visible screws, you could Photoshop them. But in a video, it's all real. So if the projects are nice and if they turned out great and the craftsmanship is good, there's nothing to hide. So with video, you can really like zoom in on those things. And it's even not just the finished product or the finished house, but also the making of. And that's something that I really enjoy looking at for other projects, but also like love creating for our own projects, because I see that a lot of people like to see how this is really made. And also it's both like people who love architecture or other architects, but also clients, and they really see like what it takes to build a house like that. And it gives them maybe a better understanding of the process and how many people are involved and how long things take. And it gives them a better expectation when they start of what the journey is going to be like, and also brings them closer to us in a way, or like lets them know me and our team in a much better before we even start. And I think that makes the collaboration much easier.
Let's move away from Instagram and these, I don't want to say Instagrammable places, because we are surely moving to another exciting topic, which is on the way to become one of these places. Your office will soon move into new premises. And as you're transforming an old sweets factory in Antwerp into an inspiring place, tell us a little bit more about it. I thought you don't like chocolate.
No, true. But they didn't make chocolate. They made all kind of other sweets and candy, and like the Coca-Cola bottles, you know, like these kind of candies. Our office is now currently based in also a really nice location. It's also a factory building, but it's a place. It's a kind of creative hub as well. It's a small group of industrial buildings with a very un-Belgian look. When people see photos, it reminds them of New York, Brooklyn, or Berlin even, because it's kind of, you know, gritty buildings overgrown with plants, red brick. They opened up this place, let's say, a few years ago, and we were one of the first people there. There was no companies there, but I walked past it because our first office was also close by. And I saw those buildings and I inquired, and then we started renting that place, but I really enjoyed it. But we were at that time with 6 people and now we're 16 people still in the same space. So it was just getting too small. So I was already like dreaming of a new, bigger place and maybe to buy our own place. I think now about a little less than a year ago, we got a message from a real estate broker in Antwerp that I had been in contact with earlier. And then he said, like, I might have something for you, which could be interesting. It's a candy factory and they're going to sell parts of it. And I saw the plans, but I was already intrigued by seeing those concrete beams. And I made an appointment to visit it in like 3 days. But the same day, I already went to the building to see it from outside. And then we were actually able to buy the top floor of the building. The seller is doing like some work to isolate the building from the exterior side, but inside we said, like, just don't touch anything. We want it exactly like this. Don't do anything to the walls. Please don't make it clean. Just leave it all very dirty and gritty, because that's what really attracted us, like those super heavy concrete beams. Some of the walls look like they have been on fire, you know, and the floors are these orange brown tiles, very typical factory floor. And we really could see ourselves in a space like that. Yeah, so we started work on the remodeling process. It's actually 2 different spaces connected with an open air terrace. And our idea is to have 1 space more for all the desks, the working islands, like a landscape style office, very collaborative, but bigger so we can still grow our team. And then the other space is really like for meetings, but also to eat, to cook together with the team and to invite people there, or even to host some small events there, or to do a little exposition. Let's say if we would design a furniture piece, we can show it there and we can really connect with people. And also if we have clients over, they can meet us there. That's a wonderful project, of course. And the atmosphere we have in mind is actually to have very rough and gritty environment contrasted with some very refined pieces. We didn't share any images yet on social media, but we want to really like play off this contrast and go for some jewelry pieces, you know, let's say some furniture pieces or crazy marble kitchen island, these kind of elements which are like freestanding in the space and are kind of creating kind of nearly like a shocking contrast with those walls. And again, like show this craftsmanship without creating a completely clean environment, because it also needs to be inspiring and it can be a bit more daring than a work for a private house. It's for the clients on one hand, but it's also for the team on an equal part, actually, because we want to create an environment which attracts even people and which invites people to work in our team and to work together and also to come to the office, because these days you can work from home. But I do believe in working together and brainstorming together. And we're very flexible and people work like partly, or some days they work from home, but we like to have moments where everybody is together, or like part of the team is together, to really work on a project and sketch together. And for that, I think in the future, it's going to be even more important to create a good space where it's work to make the journey or make the trip. Yeah, just a nice environment to be inspired to do your best work, actually, and to attract the best talent, which is also important, because we want to create a really good, a strong team, people who share the same drive, the same energy, and the same passion for detail and for architecture. And I think having a good office space is going to be a crucial part and something that we really enjoy creating. It's not just about the work we do. It's also creating the environment and creating a company where we like working ourselves and where we hope our people are also enjoying working.
So what is the plan? How long is it going to take to move to this new creative space?
We are dreaming of moving there around New Year. So it's okay. A crazy timeline, of course. But of course, we're going to share like the process of that realization on social media. And
We're crossing our fingers.
Yeah, thank you.
So next year we will come and visit you at this inspiring place.
Yeah, you're definitely welcome to see it. And I hope it's going to be something special. And we're lucky to be able to, you know, work with our partners and trusted craftsmen to really create something together. So it's also not just for us, but also for them, a kind of showpiece.
It's become a tradition with us that we conclude our podcast with one final personal question. You have a passion for architecture, materials, and details. What else?
My biggest other passions would be traveling, to see as many inspiring places. I used to travel already quite a lot as a student and as a kid more in Europe, and then I started going further. That's definitely one of my biggest passions outside of my work, but actually now it merged with our work as well. That's probably also one of the reasons why I wanted to work internationally, because then I can combine this traveling and working and immersion. I still try to make time also to make some big trips apart from work as well, to really charge the batteries and to get some inspiration and new ideas without a specific project in mind even.
For us, this has been a great journey as well. Very inspiring. Thank you for that. We and all of our listeners are undoubtedly longing for more. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for your time.
It's time to say goodbye from us now until the next episode of Jung Architecture Talks, Jung's Architecture Podcast.